If you're just getting into long-range hunting or you're looking to increase your skills as a marksman, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Extreme Outer Limits Podcast.
Welcome to the Extreme Outer Limits Podcast. Guys, I'm here with one of our mainstays and co-host, Kelly McMillan. And what we're going to do here is we're going to kind of keep a short and sweet podcast as introduction to get into the overall scheme of the Extreme Outer Limits Podcast. But what we'd like to do is pick on Kelly a little bit, put him in the hot seat, and kind of get his bio out there. He's a wealth of knowledge, been in the industry longer than anybody I know. So, Kelly, why don't you take us back in time a little bit? I mean, you genuinely, you and your family have been around in this game a long time. So,
well, thanks, Bob. Really excited to start this podcast. Really excited to do something with you. It's been a while since we've worked together. That's always been a pleasure. So I'm really excited about this. If you want a little bit of history, we go back to Phoenix, Arizona. That's my father was born and raised here. He spent 20 years in the Air Force moving around the Southwest. When he retired in 1968, I was 13. We came to Phoenix to live. It was always his home, my home, even though people ask me, are you a native? And I say, yeah, I'm a native that wasn't born here, because it's odd to find a native in Arizona. But the fact that we didn't live here never negated the fact that it was always our home. So, my father retired in 68, started trying to find ways to make a living in the firearms industry. He had grown up on a ranch here in Arizona, had his first gun at 7 years old. Both of his older brothers, you know, were engineer types making firearms and getting involved in the firearms industry. So he bought a couple of stocks from Chet Brown back in the very early days of fiberglass stocks to build bench rest guns on them. And by the time he finished building both of them and finished the stocks and painted them and got them all ready, he said, man, there's got to be a better way. I think I can do better than this. So that's how he got the initiative to start the fiberglass stock business. He was working as a mold tech at Motorola. So he had some background of making molds and how that process worked. And to be perfectly honest, the process has changed a little bit, but basically, you know, 43 or 44 years ago, we were making stocks almost the same way that we're making them today. And it's not because we're sitting on our laurels and not trying to keep up with the state of the art. We've done that. And as we go along, we try to find new products, new ingredients, different resins, different materials. But to be perfectly honest, the way we started doing it and the way we came up with the processes and the recipes and everything that goes into making a fiberglass gun stock, it's the way I'd choose to do it all over again, even with all the new technology. And, you know, there are some of our competitors that are using autoclaves and they're used in reverse vacuums. You know, they'll cover a piece of balsa wood with fiberglass, stick it in a bag and vacuum it. So there are a number of other ways to make fiberglass stocks, but this is the one that I would choose. I still believe that it produces the strongest, most durable, most reliable stocks on the market. So it was amazing to me that throughout the years, as much as we've tried to stay up with the times, we end up basically, you know, with very small changes and basically the same process that we've always had. You know, my father really was a gun builder. That's all he ever wanted to do. He started making fiberglass gun stocks as a way to help supplement his income and to allow him to build guns that were better than the next guys. And this was all in a bench rest mentality when it first started. So he never really thought that the stock company would ever be a big company. He thought that, you know, I'll make as many as I need and I'll sell a few along the way. But, you know, there's only, you know, a couple of thousand bench rest shooters around the country at any one given time. So the market's not really huge. Well, little did he know that since that time, we've been making four bench rest stocks a day, every working day, which is 250 days a year, for almost 40 years. So where they're all going, I have no idea, but people still shoot Macmillan, the original Macmillan bench rest stock that my dad made in 1973. People still buy that and use that pattern. So obviously he started out with something that really worked.
Yeah. I mean, that's several anniversaries come and gone of that same design, and it's still just out there kicking butt, I guess, huh?
Yeah. So when I started with him in 1975, every time he would give me a job and show me how to do something, it was my job from that time on. And his whole process was to get out of the stock business so that he could build more rifles. That's why he wanted me in the business, and that's it, how it worked out. By 1979, I had been working for 4 years. He technically never was a part of the stock company from that time on. So he did make a couple of the big decisions, like in 1983 when we bought our first CNC machine. That was $50,000, and that was a huge amount of money back in those days, and especially for a small company that was just my mother and father and myself working. So we had no employees. And so it was a big decision. So he made those kinds of decisions. He tried to learn how to program it. Thank goodness my brother's a manufacturing technology engineer and knew the programming side of it. So he helped us out with that. But that changed our business.
Were you guys in a shop, or were you still running from, say, a garage or something from your home?
Well, we were in a shop. My dad bought 2.5 acres and built what looked like garages out behind it.
Okay.
Detached garages, but they were actually 2 24-by-24-foot shops.
Okay.
And the rifle company was in one, and the stock company was in the other.
Oh.
So it wasn't until 1984 that we actually moved into a commercial building, 3,000 square feet, that was basically a real manufacturing process.
And did you still tandem the guns with the stocks even when you moved into that building?
For the first few years, he had 1,500 square feet and I had 1,500 square feet. It was actually two 1,500 square foot incubator bays that shared the same office. So we kept them separate, but it was in 87 when he sold the rifle company and it moved down the street. Where I took over the entire shop, and he officially at that point had basically no involvement in the stock company from that point on.
Okay, all right. And then so we're into the mid-80s. Now it sounds like, from what I'm gathering, you're pretty much off and running on your own at that point, huh?
Well, you know, we decided that we needed to do some advertising, and my dad was not really big on advertising. He thought gun writers were a bunch of know-nothing nobodies that wanted something for nothing, and that, I think, was an exact quote. So it took me a number of years to walk back that statement that was made by my father and get people to understand that I didn't feel that way, that gun writers really have a significant place in this industry. Because before the internet, the only way people learned about the new products and what was new on the market and what made them different was by reading articles in Guns and Ammo or Shooting Times or whatever magazine they liked to read. So it was really big to get the writers on your side and to do them. And if it took giving them a stock occasionally to write an article, that's a cheap form of advertisement as far as I'm concerned. So that was what we did. Today, in this day and age with the internet, you can find out through podcasts like this one and others a lot more about the companies that you want to do business with and the products that you want to do purchase than you ever could before the internet, you know, got to be so prolific.
Yeah, the internet is a double-edged sword. It's a great thing, but you know, you got to kind of keep your thumb on it every once in a while too, right? It's got a good and a bad.
It makes experts out of everybody. That's right. And you know, being anonymous makes people feel like they can say or do anything they want to and get away with it. So it's a case of having to really vet somebody, at least if not physically, but mentally vet them as to whether or not you're going to take what they say with a grain of salt or whether you believe in them. And I think that's one of the things that you've done that I am so impressed with. And when we talked, when we first started our relationship, you know, you said, I'd like for people to look at me as the authority on long range hunting. And I said, well, you know, there's certain things that you've got to do and certain things that you can't do. And I think you've done all of the right things. And I think beyond a shadow of a doubt, if you pick one person out that has the experience and the knowledge to be that expert, you're the man.
Oof. I don't know. That's a tall order. all right. Well, let's reel this back in a little bit. Let's put it back on you. So I really want to drive home with, you know, with our listeners. I really passionately feel like this podcast, and we're going to, some of this information will be shared on other episodes that we do, but I feel like we've got the makings to do something really, really cool here, because you pick up, you know, it's like anything, like your business, right? 40 some years, and you're going through the evolution of, you know, as your dad would say, no advertising, just grind through it. That's how we're going to run our business, to you getting in there and trying to, you know, back up and resituate that a little bit. So no, maybe the new model, in order to go along these growth lines, we're going to do a little bit of this advertising. Well, now, I mean, get into the 2000s, right? Now you're in the internet phase. Now, you know, you're producing, well, let's kick off to the hunting stocks, right? Because I think from what I'm understanding, and the listeners are understanding, it kind of started with a target mindset, but then McMillan has blown up into every faceted stock for every manufactured gun out there, whether it's hunting or what. So bring us up speed on that stuff.
You know, there's been several degrees of variation in how we got to where we are today. And I think the first thing that happened after the bench rest phase, which was where we started, was the Marine Corps. You know, my father was getting a pretty good reputation of building accurate rifles. And when the Marines came back from Vietnam, very low success rate with the semi-automatic weapons, but a very high success rate with their sniper program. So they felt like, well, you know, we really, in this day and age, in the way we're fighting wars today, we really need to put together a viable sniper rifle program. And the M40A1 was what they used in Vietnam. So they started out to develop the M40A1. And that was basically the very first stock that we made other than a bench rest stock. They came to my father and said, you know, if you were going to build a sniper rifle today, how would you build it and what would it look like? And he said, well, Remington's about as good as you can get off the shelf there. And they had some Remingtons in their M40 program and some went Model 70s. But he preferred the Remingtons because of the round body as opposed to the flat body. And made some easier to bed and more consistent. So he said, I'd take a Remington. They got a decent trigger. You can work with that. I'd put a stainless steel barrel on it, a match grade barrel, because you need the accuracy. Plus you want the weather resistance. And of course it's got to have a fiberglass stock, because as you found out in Vietnam, weather can play hell on your guns. And if you have a wood stocked rifle, you're just never really sure how well that's going to shoot or to what point of aim it's going to shoot day to day. So they liked the idea. He put a mock rifle together that basically ended up looking exactly like the M40A1. He did not use he just used a standard BDL floor plate. The Marine Corps kind of felt that was a little weak. So they took the steel Model 70 and modified it for the 700. And then that basically made it the M40A1. From that time on, the Marines looked to Gale and to McMillan fiberglass stocks for almost everything that they did in terms of accuracy, and not only for the field, but also in their competition teams. In 1982 or three, my dad built them 12 rifles, six on Remington 700s and six on Model 70s for their shooting team. And that year they beat the Army team in the all services match for the first time in a number of years. And with those rifles, they were 300 Win Mags. With those rifles, they beat the Army every year until they rebarreled them. So, and they had my uncle's barrels on them, and they had McMillan fiberglass stocks on them. So the Marine Corps started to look to us to be kind of an authority in all things, you know, considering accuracy and fiberglass stocks. And then a lot of the shooting industry started to make high power stocks, and we started to make silhouette stocks and a bunch of other types of competition. But all this time, all of our competitors, and as you know, a lot of your hunting customers also shoot competitively. When you're a gun guy, you're a gun guy. Now, maybe some guy specializes in competition, but you know, if he gets to get out with his son or his buddies or his dad for a week during the hunting season, they usually do that as well. So we were getting more and more requests for stock specifically for hunting rifles. And so that kind of phase from competition to tactical in the M40A1 program into hunting pretty much filled out the entire spectrum of what fiberglass stocks really could be.
Off top of your head, and you may not even know this, but how many, not models, but manufacturers does McMillan Stocks make stocks for?
You know, there's almost no commonly known action that we can't make a stock for. Even Husqvarna's, I don't know if you're familiar with that
just
brand.
Haven't heard of it.
But we make stocks and have inletting programs for several models of the Husqvarna. And I only use that because that's not a very commonly known. You know, we do all the different Mausers, and we don't have a large selection of Mauser stocks, but we have a couple of stocks and a large selection of inletting programs. All of the American manufacturers have used our stocks at one time or another, with the exception of Ruger. They're the only major manufacturer of any note that has never put a McMillan fiberglass stock on one of their factory rifles. We've done OEM accounts with almost everybody else.
Wow.
So not only have we developed stocks for the individual customer who has a Seiko, we've actually sold stocks directly to Seiko, and they put them on their rifles. The same with Remington and U.S. Repeating Arms when they had Winchester and FN and Steyr and SIG and, you know, almost as many people as rifles as you can think of, we've made them for the manufacturers.
Yeah, I know there's a bunch of them. I mean, I get on your website, well, colors even too, right? You have so many different molded in or paint options. Well, truth be told, we've been pinging samples back and forth for an inline change we want to do. And actually, that stock come in yesterday, and we hit a home run. We got
awesome.
It now. We got it now.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, well, what's really cool is the stock that come in that we wanted to verify that we thought would be the home run, which is being bedded right now, and I'll take that rifle. It'll be a 300 Ultra that I'm going to use this season for the TV show. So we'll get that thing out there and get using it right away.
So you're back to the Ultra, huh?
Yeah. Jeez, man, I don't, you know. Well, you know how it is. Like you said, right? If you're a gun guy, you're a gun guy. And so you find ways, it seems, to chase this little thing or that little thing. And we've got a bullet that's coming for the Ultra that's pretty exciting. So I'm gonna switch gears to a 30 cal. For primary this season, but
we talked, and you've always been sort of a 7mm guy, and you really liked it. You got the 195s, which was your bullet, makes a big difference. It's almost a game changer when you talk about the 7mm bullet, when you can have that kind of BC. Great flying bullet too, so long range stuff is awesome. You kind of dabbled in the nozzlers, but when you and I were talking not too long ago, I said, you know, what about the 30 nozzler, and you said, well, you know, it's just not as good as the Ultra. So, and the Ultra can do everything and then some, and that's the way I felt about it too. So I was glad you agreed, and that I didn't have to build a rifle that I really wasn't ever going to use, because I'm a firm believer in the 300 Ultra.
Yeah.
Especially with the EOL chamber.
Yeah, no, it's good. It works. Like you said, you hit it right on the head, right? There was definitely some function gains in the Nosler cartridge family there, like the 26, it enhanced the 6.5s, the 28, it cleaned up some of the 7mm issues. But when you got to the 30, it's just like, well, there was already a cartridge out there that was better, and I don't know if that'll get lost in outer space or what, but anyway, the other ones are really, really good. The Ultra is it's a mainstay. It ain't going anywhere. So
I want to get back to what we were just talking about before this, though. What we did with you in giving you samples and working with you to come up with something that was exactly like what you wanted is the same type of stuff that we do with all the manufacturers. And we also do that with each individual customer. Just so our listeners and viewers will understand, we make about 12,000, 13,000 stocks a year. Of those 13,000 that we'll make this year, 8,500 to 9,000 of them will be individual, one at a time orders for a guy who has a Remington or a Winchester or a Defiance Action that wants to put a stock on it. And we make the exact stock that he's asking for, all the way from whatever receiver he's got, bottom metal, custom barrel contour, if that's the case, and give him the options of length of pull, whether he wants adjustable cheek piece on particular models, and the type of finish that he wants. So every single stock is made as a custom order to an individual customer's specific needs. And we follow that all the way through the process with the tracking system, so that every time he calls, when we tell him 4 months, they usually start calling in about two. So, you know, they just can't wait. And so now with our new program, we can look in the computer. We know exactly which stage it's in now, when it got there, which gives us an idea when it's going to leave and how far that is to the end of the process. So we're much better equipped to tell the customers exactly where their stock is and help them to, you know, kind of live through that 4 months of agony waiting for them to get that stock that most of them have been saving for quite a while to be able to purchase.
Sure, sure. I can't even imagine being, I mean, I've been to your shop a couple times, and I mean, I know what goes on there. I've visually seen it with my own eyes, but the tracking system that has to go into it, like you said, right? It's an all handmade stock, but at the end of the day, to be efficient, it's going to run in a system. It's in the queue, so to speak, all the time for another operation or another this or that until it hits the very end. It's you guys got to have, if one little hitch in your system goes, I can imagine you probably pull your hair out till you find that one thing, huh?
Well, you know, and every now and then a stock will not get scanned and it'll get lost somewhere. But it's much easier to find it now than before, when we were just looking in every box trying to find one. We at least can backtrack to the last place the computer knew that it was at and see what the progress was from there. You know, but that's one of the things that makes us unique. We have 100 different types of stocks. We have about over 100 different types of molds. So we make stocks for so many different kinds of receivers and custom barrels and everything. Most of our competitors are limited in that way, and so it gives us an advantage that we can do some things that they can't do. But one of the big things is that we really work really hard to make the customers feel like, yes, it's expensive, and you know, I have to wait 4 months to get it, but we try to make them feel like it's all worth it once they get it. Our customer service is always the first thing that we think about, is how we can make the customer happy and how we can get him exactly what he wants, so that when the stock arrives, he doesn't have to say, well, you know, this isn't really what I wanted, and you know, I had to buy this just instead of this. We try to make everything happen just the way he'd like for it to. And I think that's what makes McMillan a little different. Most people have two questions: how come your stocks cost so much, and how come they take so long? And almost everybody who ever comes to our shop, and we freely give tours to anyone who wants to come, we recommend people that if they get some time in Phoenix and they can come by the shop, we'd love to show them around. But everyone who's ever taken a tour says, oh, now I understand. I can understand why it costs so much and why it takes so long. And I promise I'll never complain again. So, you know, that's one of the things I encourage all people, that if they get a chance to come to the shop and see what it takes, I think they'll have a much better understanding of why.
Well, that's a good invite. I know I've been there, and heck, even if I'm just walking through, I'm always peeking off in the corners and looking at this and looking at that. There's so many different things, you don't catch it. It's kind of like watching a movie two or three times and you see things you didn't see the first time. So, All right, hey, let's pull this back for a minute, though. So what? Now, it's a little different than TV, right? TV is a little bit more like, okay, we're going to say or we're going to do this, and this is a little bit more candid. So, Kelly, I want to ask you, don't divulge too much information. But since we're going down this rabbit hole, you want to share with us, and if you don't want to, don't do it. We can go down later down the road. But you told me some information yesterday about something that might be coming down the road for you. Do you want to share?
I think it's a little premature to really talk about it, but I just will remind everybody watching or listening to keep your eye on MacmillanUSA.com. We've got new stuff coming out, new things happening. It's not too early to talk about the MC3, MC cubed stocks that we're developing, their injection molded plastic stocks in the pattern of the A5 and the Game Scout. The A5 will be available with adjustable cheekpiece, spacer system, detachable box magazine bottom metal, bottom polymer, we'll call it. We're actually going to mold our own bottom metal so that when a guy orders a stock, if he's got a BDL, but he wants to switch it to a DBM, he just orders that model with the DBM, and it will come with a magazine box, and that will be priced accordingly. And so that, that guys who really want to upgrade their factory rifle, but they just don't feel like they're in a position to, you know, pay $800-$900 for a Macmillan A5. They'll be able to buy our Legend, which will be the name of it. And that name comes as our kind of homage to Chris Kyle. He used the A5 on the TAC-338 that he took on his last deployment. So, and he always comments that that's one of his favorite guns. He used to comment that was one of his favorite guns. So that's a way for us to kind of pay tribute to him. So the Legend will be virtually identical in shape and size and weight and everything to our Macmillan A5, but it'll be molded out of a super high-tech polymer, something different than anybody else is making stocks out of. And we're absolutely 100% sure it'll be the finest plastic stock on the market. And if it weren't, we wouldn't do it. You know, that's the only reason I'm in the business to make plastic stocks, because I think we can do something that nobody else has done.
So with that line, are you going to, say, prefab it for, say, a Remington 700 only? Or is it still going to be a customer order? You know, they have a Browning, they have a Tika, they have a Seiko. Is it going to be anyone that they want, or will it be very specific to a model?
Yeah, it's going to be strictly the very first ones coming out will be short or long 700s, all right-handed. The hunting rifles will all come with a Magnum barrel contour. But even if you have a standard factory barrel contour, you put it in the Magnum contour, it just has a little more free float, but the contour is the same. It's just a little bit smaller, so it looks really nice. So you don't have to worry about having a big old gaping void and have it different sizes at different points on the forend. So, and it'll all be either the Remington Varmint or the Sendero contour, which is basically the same, but if it's in a long 700, they call it a Sendero, and if it's in a short 700, they call it a Varmint, but basically the same contour. We do anticipate getting into Savage and Seiko. Those two models down the road will probably be big enough sellers for us to be able to justify the mold cost. Unfortunately, we make our Macmillan Fiberglass Stocks makes their own molds. They're relatively inexpensive. It's a significant investment to just the mold for the Legend is over what I expected to spend for both of the molds. So I'm just telling you, because we're having it convertible from short to long and from, you know, the different size barrel contour, moving that around, it's made it a pretty sophisticated mold and very expensive to make.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, you've given us a lot of good information. These podcasts are interesting because you can chase these rabbits, you can come back out, you know, you can mold the conversation wherever it takes you. I like it. So let's leave the Macmillan stock thing on the table, and let's take, you know, the last few minutes of today's episode, and let's focus back on you, right? So I think one of the things that excites me so much, you know, I come into this, you know, a handful of years ago, You've always been there for me. You've always had confidence in me. You've always, even believed when the waters were rough that we'd get through it. So what I like in working with you is the fact that you're such an active owner, right? Some of the companies, maybe they get to a certain size or whatever. I don't know, but the owners aren't as active. And you and I, no matter what, if I can't catch you, it's probably because you're on a fishing boat. But I know when you get done, you're going to get a hold of me, right?
Right.
So as we wrap this thing up, well, two things. Real quick, man, I know because I know you well enough, but I know a big portion of your heart is into fishing. So obviously you've done well in the business thing, and you're very attached to your business. So if you're not fishing, you're there. But what do you got on your schedule for the rest of the year, right? I know what you got a little bit, but what hunts you got, what fishing trips you got that are exciting that you're going to go on for the rest of the year?
Okay, I know this podcast is going to be broadcast at some time in the future, and we don't know exactly when that is, but I'm leaving this Saturday to go to Canada to support the Team USA F-class team in shooting in the World Championships. McMillan Fiberglass Stocks has been a gold sponsor for the last 3 years, building up to this finale, and all of our time and effort and work is coming to a culmination, and next week will be the team matches. And so I'm going to be there just as a supporter, just as a rooter to cheer all the American shooters on and want to bring that world championship home again this year. So that's the first thing. I've got a hunt scheduled with you, both elk and mule deer in Star Valley Outfitters. And I'm really excited about that. You know, hunted there last year. Very great place to hunt from, and really excited about spending some time with you. I've got an
weather too.
Yeah. So we're a little earlier in the season, so I think maybe we'll be in a little bit better position as far as that goes.
Right.
I have an antelope hunt in New Mexico the second week of August. October. It's actually the first hunt of the season. I put my deposit in early and paid for my tags early. It's a landowner's tag, but first come, first serve on getting to choose your time. So me and a couple of my buddies are going to go and shoot an antelope in New Mexico. And then I've got a deer hunt December 1st through 10th, a whitetail hunt in Arizona. And for those people who are watching that think, Midwest whitetail, no, these are coos deer, or properly pronounced cow's deer, but they're about 85 pounds, and they are very, very attuned at staying about 450 to 500 yards away from you. So everybody who's ever hunted coos deer a lot says, man, if you get a shot at 450, you better take it, because there's just no way you're going to get any closer than that. So
best that you're going to get.
Yeah. And it's like shooting at the size of a mid-sized dog. You know, their torso is only about 12 inches tall. So, it requires good, accurate rifles, good marksmanship, and some perseverance, because you don't just walk up to a canyon and find them sitting on the other side out in the open. So
yeah, exactly. All right, well, good. Well, it's been a great conversation here. I really just wanted to kind of get a little bit of Kelly McMillan on the table, right? Because we're going to keep pushing through these podcasts, and we're going to chase down kind of what we think is relevant in the market today and in the future, not only from maybe what our businesses are doing, but the things that we want to, stay relevant, so to speak. I know you've got a little bit different tune, which I don't want to get into yet, but of where we're going to use your expertise for the listeners. And then we're going to probably kind of lean on my backbone for what I normally do as well. But it's been a really good conversation, Kelly. I really appreciate it. I think the listeners will enjoy it. And we'll just connect next time.
Great. Look forward to it.
All right, buddy. See you later.
Thanks.